There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and the author of The Anxiety Solution. So you might be aware that this month is Sober October, and lots of people are challenging themselves this month to give up alcohol for the month to perhaps benefit themselves in terms of their health and just give it a try and see what it's like. And so I thought it would be a really good opportunity to talk to my friend Joanne Bradford about this very topic. Now, Joanne has been named a British guru by Marie Claire magazine, and her work has been featured in publications such as Vogue, Cosmopolitan, Grazia, Psychologies, and The Times magazine. And she is a certified life coach. She also is an emotional freedom practitioner, and she's a sound healer. And she basically fuses all these things together in her one-to-one and group sessions. Now, this episode is for you if perhaps you're someone who has noticed that there's a link between their anxiety levels or their confidence levels and alcohol, and they're keen to maybe just learn a bit more about this and explore what it could be like to have a break from alcohol or to become alcohol-free completely. It might be for you if you had never even considered it was a possibility that you could not drink, and you're maybe wondering what that might be like, because that's one of the things that me and Joanne discuss. And it might also be for you if you're already on this journey to reducing your alcohol consumption or giving up alcohol completely, and you just want some more inspiration and ideas on how to stay on the path or get some more motivation for continuing. Either way, I hope you'll listen to this with open-mindedness and really consider it as a possibility and an option. Because I remember thinking in the past that actually not drinking wasn't even an option for me, despite the fact that it was having really negative effects on my relationships, on how I felt in myself, my anxiety, my social anxiety. And actually, just to know that this is a possibility, I think, can be quite empowering. So Joanne and I talk about our own stories in terms of alcohol and experiences that we've had that have led to us both having made the decision to not drink, especially, well, me for the time being, at least. We talk about the benefits and costs of being alcohol free, because there are a lot of benefits, but of course there are drawbacks, there are challenges that come up. And we also talk about the surprising things that happen when you stop drinking that actually most people don't talk about. And we cover topics like how to deal with other people's perceptions of you when you decide to stop drinking, and how to explain that to other people, and how to navigate certain situations like social situations if you're not drinking. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. It's quite a long one. We talk for about an hour and 7 minutes and go into a lot of detail. And I, for one, am feeling really inspired after talking to Joanne on this topic. So do let us know what you think on Instagram. I'm at Chloe Brotheridge. Joanne is at Motherheart. And we'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this. So please enjoy this episode with Joanne from Motherheart. Welcome, Joanne. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Very well, thank you, Chloe. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Really good. Can you tell us, for people that maybe don't know you and what you do, what it is that you do and how you got there, and also how you came to be alcohol free?
Sure. So what I do, I used to be an actress, and the last 6 years or so I've moved into the wellbeing industry and Started off as a life coach, and now I work with a technique called emotional freedom technique and sound healing. So that's kind of my day-to-day work, is I run one-to-one sessions and I also do sort of group sessions as well. But what I'm here to talk to you about today is a little bit different than that. It sometimes comes into my work, but not always. And that's, we're going to talk about sobriety today, which is, I guess, you know, it has impacted my professional life in a huge way, actually, and was a big part of the career change from actress to what I do now. But more than anything, it's a passion for me, and it's something that I really love talking about. I think it's still a little bit taboo, and you know, lots of people have got lots of questions and resistance around it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting stuck in today and discussing how to live alcohol free.
Amazing. And it's very topical because this podcast is coming out at the beginning of October, and it's is it sober for October? Isn't it?
Yeah,
Stoptober, that's the smoking one. Yeah,
I always get confused with that as well. Yeah, and Go Sober for October is alcohol-free month.
Yes. Yeah, so it might be on people's minds a bit more. And I mean, one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you was firstly, because I have recently become alcohol-free. And secondly, because I get so many messages from people about the link between alcohol and anxiety and the effects that alcohol has on us, in terms of, you know, we use alcohol to feel more confident or to calm down, and yet the day after we end up really paying for it in terms of our kind of mental health. So it'd be good to sort of discuss that aspect of it. But can you share a bit more about what made you decide to stop alcohol consumption? Yeah. What led you down that
That's
path?
A really formal way of asking a question. I stopped alcohol consumption. So for me, I was always from the age of sort of, it sounds ridiculous now, but it felt quite normal at the time. 12 or 13, I was drinking Alco Pops. Is that normal? I don't know.
Normal for me in Lancashire. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's a bit about being rural, like these rural towns, maybe, because we're both sort of not from the city, but it was very normal for me and my friends at that age. And it was nothing crazy, but we drank Alco Pops. And I always remember, you know, the first time I felt drunk, I just remember feeling very much at home in my own skin and just really appreciating that feeling of just the lack of self-consciousness and the fact that I was able to flirt with boys, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So it started off, I think, probably how it starts off with everyone, which is it's generally quite a pleasant experience. And then a couple of years into that, I'm going to get really heavy really quickly here, but it's sort of part of my story. So when I was 14, I had an incident with a much older man, and I was very drunk, and he was sort of twice my age and engaged to someone else. And it was a really inappropriate incident, actually. But at the time, it was kind of my first sort of sexual encounter. And at the time, what happened, looking back, as you do over kind of many years, is that I began to associate intimacy with being drunk. That was how it worked. Is that if you were going to make yourself vulnerable and sort of romantically engage with someone, then you needed to be really, really drunk to do that. And so I think from that point on, from when I was 14, I was quite a heavy drinker. It was never daily, but I would drink at the weekends when I was socializing, like a lot of teenagers, you know, just sort of hanging out in people's garages or in the parks and all that sort of stuff. It sounds so weird now, but that's sort of what you
in
do.
The back field. We used to call it the back. There's a field behind all the houses. The back field. Meet you in the back field and drink tins of lager or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. and that was just how it was, you know, when we were young. And but I think the key thing for me, what I've really realized, is that I didn't evolve any confidence or sense of being comfortable kind of in my body and how I would interact with the member of the opposite sex. It was always get drunk and then that sort of thing would happen. And I do remember writing in my diary when I was about 17, I do remember writing, and I've sort of read it since, I said, I don't think I have the same relationship with alcohol as a lot of my friends, because I felt like I didn't really have a stop button. There was a certain point where if I was so drunk, it sort of all bets were off. It was like I couldn't get enough, really. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I sort of knew from being about 17. And then I moved to London, went to a really intense drama school training where if I'd have drunk every night, I just would never have made it in the next day. So I actually became very controlled about my behavior and when I chose to go out. And I am a massive control freak, and I'm quite a hard worker. It's interesting actually sometimes, because I think it's easy to assume that people who might have a sort of unhealthy relationship with alcohol are always really outlandish, and you always see the signs of it publicly, and you know, it's very much on display. That can be the case, of course. We've all got that friend who goes too far and always talks and laughs about it, and it's a very public thing. I was much more private with my interactions with alcohol and very, very controlled. I knew that I would sort of quite quickly go off the rails if I was on a night out. So I would be very sort of structured with when I allowed it to happen. But when it did happen, it was kind of all hell broke loose. So I did 3 years at drama school. And it was, I think, around those years I started to black out. That's when I first realized that I would have major lapses in my memory. But it was actually upon graduating from drama school at 21, with no structure in place, you know, lots of part-time jobs, sort of bit jobs in London, no real reason to be up early in the morning, that I would go out the night before, friends with a lot of creatives, big alcohol and drug culture, obviously, in London. Mm-hmm. And we were all young and having fun. But it used to, for me, it just became quite unmanageable. And I would black out, and I started doing things that sober I would never have done. You know, and one of those things for me is sort of in terms of my, I want to say romantic, there's nothing romantic about it, but my interactions with men, things would happen where I'd wake up the next day and I would, you know, it wasn't even like, it was an interesting one. It was sometimes about this situation is, you know, perhaps a married man, just something that my morals and my set of values would never have considered that had I not been off my face. So it was that shock factor for me of like, I'm doing things that are not me, but yet it is me, but it's, you know, it's, so it was scary. And sometimes just sort of finding myself in situations with people that I didn't even fancy, but when you're drunk, it kind of somehow makes sense. So a lot of stuff where I felt like I wasn't really making the choices, I was no longer in control. So that led me at the age of 24 to a relationship where I actually dated someone who was sober. And I had realized at that point that I might need to consider a stint of sobriety, that there were sort of some behaviors that I wasn't feeling good about. And I really, as much as I'm brilliant at controlling my life, it felt like I was beginning to lose my grip, and actually I really wasn't in control anymore. I must say it's really important, because I think, you know, we all compare to each other's stories, and I remember feeling like, well, I'm not that bad, I don't need to stop because I'm not as bad as him or her. And I think it's really important to look at your own life and identify, is it bad enough for me in my life? You know, mm-hmm. I was never a daily drinker. I was never addicted to alcohol physically. And yet when I drank, I would go into blackout. I would do things that I felt really remorseful about afterwards. And it was slowly eroding my confidence and sense of self. And, you know, screwing up sort of next day's plans and opportunities and auditions that I was meant to be at but couldn't make because I was still asleep, etc. So, at the age of 24, I started dating someone who was sober. And it was really interesting because I could never have foreseen that would have such an impact on my own life. But watching him, we were only together for 6 months, but watching him, his process, he sort of shared a little bit about his insights into sobriety, and also just being around him and not drinking as much as a result of that. It just showed me what a life could look like without alcohol, clear-headed mornings, social events that were enjoyable and connected, but not necessarily, you know, off the wall wild. And I started to see, oh, actually, life is possible within the confines of not drinking alcohol. So that was really helpful for me. I didn't actually manage to stop drinking during that relationship. We broke up. But after we sort of parted ways, I remember very clearly thinking, right, well, I probably just need to go back and do what I used to do, which is drink all the time. I was pretty gutted that we'd broken up, to be honest. It was his decision. And thank God something in me thought, no, I found something here that has been really good for me for the past 6 months. It doesn't matter that he's not in my life anymore. I want to try and do this for me now. And they actually do say with alcohol, it has to be that way around. You can't do it for someone else. Mm. you know, and I'm sure there'll be people listening today and maybe siblings or parents have been telling you it's time to look at your alcohol intake. And it doesn't work that way. In my experience and from a lot of the people that I've seen go through this process, you have to reach, they call it the rock bottom is the kind of expression that's used, but you have to reach the point where you're sick and tired of your behavior and your relationship with drink. And until you get to that point, you probably won't stop, you know, and that's okay. You really need to reach that for yourself. So that happened to me at 24. And I didn't decide never to drink again. I think that's quite a lot of pressure for anyone. But what I did decide was one day at a time, I would start looking at my relationship with alcohol and start unpicking why it was that I felt I needed to drink socially, for intimate reasons, you know, when I was sort of having time with whoever I was going out with, what it was in me that needed to not be fully in my headspace and kind of centered in my body. Why was I wanting to check out? Mm-hmm. So that started to happen at 24, and I'm now 6 years sober, and would never have expected it. But the journey actually for me has not really been about giving up alcohol. It sounds strange to say it, but it's giving up drinking is so much more than just giving up drinking. The emotional journey, the discovery, the way that you evolve as a person is so much more than just taking alcohol out of the equation. And that is why I've remained sober, I think, is because it's a fascinating process. And it's like an onion. You're peeling more and more back and you're making more discoveries and you're advancing your life as well. So yeah, 6 years in and a huge advocate for it. And that's, I guess that's sort of my story in a nutshell in terms of how it happened.
Yeah, thank you. There's so much about what you said that I want to go into more. I suppose some people might be listening and thinking, you know, all right, you were blacking out. And some people, when they think of people with an alcohol problem, they think of tramps, or they think of people drinking Tennent's Super in the park, or, you know, drinking at breakfast time. But actually, there's a whole continuum, isn't there? And it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to get to that rock bottom before you maybe make a change. What do you think
about? Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the danger, is that, you know, I've heard some more scary stories than my own by far. And there has been part of me that thinks, oh, maybe I didn't need to go completely sober then. Maybe I'm not that bad. But I think it really is that personal thing of, if it is unmanageable for you, if it's causing difficulties in your life, you know, and that can be many aspects. It can be your behaviors that you exhibit when you drink. You know, lots of people do change. One of the signs actually of I don't really like the word alcoholic, if I'm honest. It scares me. So for people who are still drinking, I'm sure it's quite an alien word. But I just like to describe myself as, I don't have a particularly healthy relationship with alcohol, and for that reason I choose not to drink, because it keeps my life so much simpler. In terms of alcoholics, because I always used to see them very much in this cliched way and think, oh, an alcoholic is someone who drinks every day, who is completely addicted to alcohol. And that is a version of an alcoholic. But actually, a very common version of an alcoholic is someone whose nature changes. Once they consume alcohol, they change. They have an inner change, which means that they are no longer themselves. They do things that they wouldn't do. And they have a kind of a constant desire to continue drinking. And that was interesting, because for a long time I really kind of reassured myself, well, I can't really have a problem with alcohol, because I can do 3 whole weeks where I will stay in and decide, nope, not going to the pub, not doing anything social. I've had a sort of bad time, whatever it was, that maybe there was an episode which I woke up and felt a lot of shame over. And I would sort of like buckle myself in and refuse to drink for 3 weeks. But it was really kind of a white knuckle experience of, it was controlling it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what interested me most about alcoholism, if you want to call it that, or just living a sober, alcohol-free life, is that there are, it's a spectrum. And for some people, you might be able to go 6 months and not drink. But when you decide to drink and you have a few, if things end up being very chaotic and out of control, then it may be something to look at. And it may be something to look at even if that doesn't happen. You know, if you're feeling groggy, if you're feeling kind of foggy headed, it's why not have a look at an alcohol-free lifestyle? If you don't feel that drinking is serving you, it doesn't need to be dramatic. It just needs to make sense for you. to give it a little rest period or a longer period, depending on what you want to do. And on that note, I'd love to hear a little bit about why you've decided your 2.5 stint, ongoing stint. Yeah, because I'm sure our stories are different.
Yeah, I mean, I was relating a lot to what you said about the teenage years and kind of certainly my teenage years and early 20s, I was using alcohol to feel more confident and to not feel anxious in social situations and to exactly go to a nightclub and talk to anyone and that sort of thing. And I, for the first time, and I probably started drinking regularly at kind of 14, 15 and kind of going to nightclubs in Wigan, Maxime's nightclub, Rock Night on a Friday. Anyway,
amazing.
and suddenly I'd gone from this kind of quite inhibited, shy person to kind of the life and soul of the party and kind of talking to everyone and that sort of thing. And it really kind of opened up my world at that time. And yet on the Saturday morning, I'd quite often spend the whole day on the sofa, kind of not be able to get, you know, even leave the house. I would have panic attacks. I felt like I couldn't breathe properly. I had
directly off the back of a drink session.
Exactly. So I drink kind of, I used to drink Snakebite and Black, which is a horrible drink made of cider and beer mixed together, which is just shouldn't even be legal probably, which resulted in horrendous hangovers and just lots of anxiety the next day. Yeah. And kind of that cycle just continued for basically years. And I suppose what I found, and I actually had one stint of being alcohol free sort of 5 years ago or so for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Because I was doing that for kind of autoimmune reasons. I was having kind of autoimmune symptoms, so I did that for that reason. But I noticed actually I had to develop my own techniques for managing anxiety and being more confident because I couldn't just hide behind alcohol anymore. And it was a real revelation for me at that time, going to a wedding, you know, not having, you know, drinks to get on the dance floor and that sort of thing. And, you know, I learned through that experience that actually you can grow and learn a lot about yourself because you're not hiding behind something. You're not numbing yourself to kind of life's experiences. So that was one of the interesting things I found at the time. But my reasons for stopping more recently, I was at a book launch and everyone around me was sort of drinking. I was drinking as well on this night and I haven't drunk since that night. And I remember thinking, what are the reasons that I'm drinking at this book launch? Am I, you know, I've got work tomorrow. It's a Tuesday night. I know I'm not going to feel my best. I've got, you know, a busy morning. I've got a lot of projects on that I need to be focusing on. Yeah. And I realized the only reason I was doing it is to sort of fit in or to take the edge off that kind of slightly nervous thing of walking into sort of a room full of people and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with another woman there who said she was sober. And this just kind of a light bulb went off in my mind. I was like, this is what I need to do, basically.
Yeah.
And I think my kind of intuition had been telling me for a while that actually I'm more productive, more clear-headed. I can sort of work on my confidence in an authentic way if I'm not drinking. And I haven't drunk since, and
it has been
beneficial, I think, in lots of ways.
That's so cool.
What for you? What have been the main kind of benefits that you've noticed living alcohol-free?
So many. I just want to say, off the back of that thing that you've just shared, what I love about that and what I think is really helpful is that there was no catastrophe that where you had to plunge headlong into a stint of sobriety. That was a really mindful choice. And that's really encouraging because I think I know a lot of people who are waiting for the disaster or, you know, it's not quite bad enough. And I think that's really inspiring that you've just made a decision for your life that it just serves you better.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that.
Another point on that. I read the book, what's it called? About being sober, the unexpected joy of being sober.
Yes.
And I love that and I found it really inspiring. But the woman in the book does kind of reach rock bottom, and in a way I didn't really relate to that. I relate much more to the kind of the positive benefits of not doing it rather than getting away from anything being really terrible. So
totally,
for people listening, know that you don't need to reach rock bottom necessarily. You just it's about kind of maybe auditing if it's working for you right now, and if it's not, if the benefits could outweigh the costs of not drinking, I suppose, then, you know, it might be worth sort of considering.
And you know what, I feel like this is such an amazing time to explore an alcohol-free lifestyle because it's no longer weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even 6 years ago when I stopped, it really wasn't, I mean, Instagram, I don't think, had it just been created, it just wasn't, there was not the community that there is these days. On, there's some amazing sobriety people on Instagram, and there's just so much more talk in the media about it. And we're just at a place where I think we're beginning to really think for ourselves rather than just be told by the advertisements that drinking is cool and sexy and everyone should be doing it. And if you're not at the pub on Friday drinking, then you're, you know what I mean? It's like we're beginning to challenge what has been so normalized. So I think it's a really exciting time for people who might be on the fence, you know, just take a little bit of courage just from the fact that there are lots of people doing this now. And you're not going to be the only one. And there's so many resources and there's communities. And like you, you know, you met the person at the book launch who was sober as well. Mm. Everywhere you look, there are people who are also living this lifestyle. And they will start flooding into your life. You know, the longer you kind of, I say, stick at it, it's not even about enduring. It's a really, from my experience, really positive and kind of life-giving way to live. But the longer you live in that way, the more people come into your path and you're like, oh my gosh, I've got all these new friends who just are like-minded and want to live in the same way. So it's just, it's such a good time to be having these conversations and to be thinking about alcohol-free living. But in terms of the benefits, so this is one of my, I really feel very, very strongly that we often, with all things in life, but particularly when it comes to perhaps giving alcohol a kind of a break, is that we start thinking about all that we stand to lose. And so one of the key things that I really feel is most important to be focusing on if you're going to have a stint of sobriety or explore it as a lifestyle, is actually to really focus your mind, because the mind is so powerful. Focusing the mind on what you stand to gain, you know, and just really flipping it. I think it's Oprah that says, you know, what you focus on expands. And if you're focusing on the fact that you can no longer go out until 3 a.m. and be off your face and, you know, have all these conversations that you're going to forget in the morning. And you know, it's like, if you forget, if you start thinking about all the things that may no longer happen anymore, you're not going to want to give it a go. But there are so many positive things that can come off it. And they're going to be different for everyone. Everyone is probably considering an alcohol-free lifestyle for a different reason. But honestly, focusing on the gains and cultivating that in your life has been so helpful for me. You know, and it's not been the last 6 years. There's definitely been times where it's not been totally plain sailing. There's been times where I've sort of dipped into a little bit of a, oh, well, you know, this doesn't feel as fun as it used to be or whatever. And actually it's just realigning, but all of the things that I gain every day and all the ways that my life has improved and stabilized, and it's mind blowing actually. And it's just about starting. So for me, benefits have been, so the ones that were kind of came through really quickly and which I take for granted now are having a clear head in the morning, waking up feeling the same every day. You know, I used to really struggle with the dread. I used to call it the dread, as just waking up with that kind of sense of doom and the assumption, even if it hadn't happened, the assumption that I'd said something mortifyingly embarrassing, you know, or done something that I was going to regret. And often I couldn't remember because it was a blackout situation for me. But instantly I'd wake up and think, oh God, you know, look at my phone. Has anyone messaged me? Looking at my messages, did I message anyone? You know, those sorts of things. And it was just instant anxiety and a sense of dread. So that stops pretty much immediately. Yeah. Other emotions may come through once you stop drinking alcohol, and we'll come on to that. But that kind of impending sense of doom that comes through when you've got a hangover is something that very quickly dissipates, which is amazing. For me, I think, you know, looking back, it's been sort of 6 years now. Alcohol is very calorific. So I think naturally my weight has reduced, not because I've changed my ways of eating or exercising particularly, but just because I'm no longer consuming high levels of sugary drinks. I do sometimes replace that with desserts now. That's kind of my alternative.
It's reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, come on. But yeah, I mean, it's calorific drinking. And if you're doing it quite regularly or you're having sort of binge sessions, it's going to impact your body. So that's something I feel like my weight is kind of stabilized. And I'm slimmer now than I was in my early 20s. And the only thing that I've changed is my alcohol intake. So that's interesting. My skin is better. Definitely. from cutting out alcohol. I always say my resilience levels, and actually this is something that I feel is key when it comes to stopping drinking, because I think the thing that often will cause someone to decide to live alcohol-free and then actually go back to how they live normally, you know, drinking, is that there is a period of feeling quite uncomfortable. And I'm not sure if we sort of talk about and address that as much as we ought to. The reality is, unless you're extremely confident and you weren't covering over any kind of anxiety or social awkwardness with your drinking, the reality is when you stop drinking, you're going to experience those things, because it's not that they are just kind of suddenly in you. They've always been in you. It's just you've used drinks to take the edge off experiencing those emotions. And I think that is something that's really important to identify, is when you stop drinking, you are going to start feeling a lot, a hell of a lot. And it's easy to forget because it's been a few years ago, but I know that that was quite painful for me in the early days. And there were things that I used to just, you know, festivals and nightclubs and things that I was like, well, I can't do that at the moment. Like, if I'm going to not drink, I can't be in those situations yet. And it is yet. They do, things change and you evolve and you become more resilient, and I can pretty much do anything now, and I'm not fazed by it, but it's a process. So yeah, just on the note of it being emotionally resilient, that is something that didn't come overnight, but that is still happening day by day in my life today. You know, things that stress us out, where we just go, I'm going to have a glass of wine to deal with that, or I'm going to have three bottles of wine at the weekend to deal with that kind of thing. When alcohol's no longer in the equation, you've got to find ways to process it and to let go of that stress or that sadness or that anger or whatever it is. And I think that is probably the emotional side of living alcohol-free has been the biggest gain for me, because I feel so strong. I feel so equipped to deal with life on life's terms, you know, life as it is reality. And like I said, that is not an instantaneous perk, but it is one that I think once you're on the path of alcohol-free living and you continue to make your way down that path, you get more and more rewarded in that way, the emotional strength that it gives you, the clarity. Yeah.
I think it's such an opportunity, I suppose, to actually sort of get to feel those feelings that often we do kind of drown our sorrows. Or I was finding myself, you know, just before my period, being kind of irritable, kind of annoyed, grumpy, whatever. I'll just have, you know, half a bottle of wine or something, it'll take the edge off. And you know, it's lots of kind of psychologists talk about this phenomena whereby if you don't deal with your feelings, they stay inside and they come out in other ways that you don't want. We can't get away with suppressing our feelings for our whole lives. You know, that's why people have panic attacks. It's why people have breakdowns. It's why people get, I don't know, tension in their bodies or IBS, because actually these feelings are not being processed and dealt with.
Totally.
So for me, the kind of not having that crutch or that anesthetic in a way to kind of feeling things and actually having to process things is uncomfortable, but it is, you know, you grow a lot as a person, you learn about yourself, you become more resilient because, you know, hang on, actually I can handle things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I completely resonate with what you were sharing there about that.
Yeah. And it only gets better, that one. That's kind of an ever evolving one where you just get more and more equipped to deal with life, you know? So that's, I think, yeah, that's, for me, that's the biggest one. And just not having to run away from what's going on, you know? It's so easy in our culture to check out. I mean, I'm not even just talking about alcohol, I'm talking about social media. There's so many ways in which we can numb ourselves and distract ourselves, and living alcohol-free gives you a real opportunity to just to sit with what's going on inside and work it through, you know, and grow, evolve from it. Yeah, and that's, I think, that's something that everyone, no matter if you've got a destructive relationship with alcohol or not, there are things that you can gain in that respect. And also, coming on to something else that I feel quite strongly about is, I call it like looking for your superpower illusion. So why, 'cause everyone drinks for a reason, if you're aware of it or not, why do you drink alcohol? And some people will just be like, oh, well, it just helps me socialize. Yeah, but you can socialize without alcohol. So why do you choose to drink? You know, there's something, does it just help, that lubricant just helps things flow more with conversation? So then maybe there's part of you that's feeling a little bit awkward or a little bit shy. So the alcohol just helps things to flow. Maybe it's that. Lots of people identify with, they feel they're funnier, wittier when they drink. They can be more outrageous. Maybe they feel sexier on dates. You know, there's all these little things where I think it's easy to convince yourself, I don't need alcohol, but actually there is a reason why you're drinking it, you know, and why you are resisting taking out of your life for a period. There's some kind of attachment there. And so I always encourage people to look for their superpower illusion. So what's the thing that they use alcohol for as their superpower? And once you can identify what that thing is, does it make you funnier, more interesting, et cetera, then you can start to challenge it and to break down your belief system around that, that you even need it. Because alcohol, at the end of the day, it's a mind-altering substance, and it allows us to act and feel things that we don't believe we can feel without using it, you know? And so I just say, challenge that. Why can't you be outrageous? Why can't you be funny? Why can't you be life and soul of the party without drinking? And if you take alcohol out of the equation, you realize, my goodness, a bit like me, actually, I'm brilliant on alcohol in the fact that I can run a room. I have loads of energy. I don't mind getting up and making an idiot of myself. When I took alcohol out of the equation, I realized it's not that I don't want to be that person. I'm not that person. And it would be weird to try and achieve that effect sober, because it's just not me. I'm actually a one-to-one person. I'm a little bit of an introvert. I actually like being on the peripheries of a room and sort of scoping out the situation and talking to people in a much more intimate way rather than holding space and have all the attention on me. That's who I am. I never realized that when I was drinking. You know, I'd sort of swallow alcohol down and I'd become someone else. So sure, you know, now I don't drink, I could work to become that person again, but without alcohol. But I realized I don't want to. I'm really happy to be quieter and to be further in the background, you know, and that's okay for me. So you may also find, when you take alcohol out of the equation, that there are parts of yourself that you want to develop naturally, and also parts of yourself that you thought were you that fall away. It's really fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Back.
I love that idea. I think that's going to be quite an interesting thing for people to reflect on who maybe haven't thought about it that way, because drinking alcohol is so much part of the culture. It's the norm. You know, if you don't drink, you're the odd one, and yet it is a drug. I was the last person on the podcast was Sharu Izadi, who's kind of a drugs counselor, basically. And she said they refer to it as alcohol and other drugs.
Yeah.
So alcohol is a drug. Yeah. It is a drug. And that kind of struck me. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course it is a drug. We don't really think of it like that. I found that quite interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how not drinking could be a superpower as well. You know, my superpower is not drink alcohol. So I wake up on Monday morning and I get loads of work done and I've got more money and I don't have to mull over who I might have offended with my kind of outlandish comments or something. So I'm going to be thinking about that.
Real connection.
Yeah.
That's another perk, actually, is because I think something that a lot of people struggle with when they're thinking about giving up drinking is that they'll lose their friendship group. That's the number one thing that people express to me as a concern. But my whole friendship circle drinks, or my family are all big drinkers. If I became the non-drinker, I would get ousted, I'd be ostracized, you know, all of that stuff. And so the first thing I always say to that is, are they really your friends though? You know, do they really care about you if your friendship is conditional on the fact that you have to drink alcohol, you know? But one of the perks for me has actually been real connections and real conversations. Cause I used to have the most, what I consider to be brilliant conversations with people at 4 AM in the morning, and we'd open our hearts and we'd just share all this really deep, dark stuff. And then the next day you either completely forgotten it or you were dying of embarrassment that you had shared it with this person who you'd met 3 hours before, you know?
It's not real.
It's a complete illusion that's created by a drug. It's not real. And so another superpower is real, genuinely, I hate the word authentic, but authentic conversations where you allow yourself to be seen and to see someone else. Intimacy. Into BC. And when we drink, we don't let people really see into ourselves. You know, it's a cover up. It's we're out of our bodies, really. We're not grounded and connected in who we are. And that's been a real joy as well, is just the simplicity of having real conversations, you know, and the people in your life will change. And that's another thing, I think. I'm listing all the kind of negative things here, but I think it's important to touch on them. There is going to be a painful period where it's a little bit uncomfortable and you work through your awkwardness and the fact that you're actually an introvert when you thought you were an extrovert, etc. There are those things to work through for sure. And it gets better and easier. Another thing is that there are going to be, you know, most likely if you're a heavy drinker, at least there's going to be people around you who don't like the fact that you decide to stop. And they might make it difficult for you. They might guilt you. So there may be a season in your life, if you decide to do something different, where people start drifting away or you have to slightly step back from them. And it can, again, it's a tricky period, but it can be navigated. And I always use the analogy of seeing changes, sort of a period of change in your life, like a field. And when you grow crops in a field, there's a period where the soil needs to fallow. It needs a period where there's no seeds being planted. It just needs to regain all the nutrients in order to do the next round of crop growing. And I love that analogy, just in terms of, for me, it really helped me when I first gave up alcohol, because it was so scary changing my own behaviors and looking at all of my insecurities and all the reasons why I had decided to drink. And then seeing that they actually drove a few people in my life away, and they weren't on board with it, they weren't supportive. And that was hard, but what really helped me was to see that period of time as allowing this soil in my field to fallow, and that there were going to be new crops, there were going to be new friendships and new experiences, but there was a period of stillness that had to happen. And some of the crops got slain, you know, or moved to a different field. And some of them have come back, which is the beautiful thing, is, you know, people will maybe react at the time in one way, and they may come back into your life at another time and accept it. Or even I've had a couple of really close friends decide that they actually need to live alcohol free as well. You know, so we've had a few years of a little bit of distance where we've not hung out as much. And now we're super tight, because they too realized a lot of their resistance and judgment about me stopping drinking was because they had their own stuff going on with it. So I think it's trusting, you know, that some people may step away. It may be forever, it may be temporary, but actually at the crux of it, the people who love you and want to support you and want the best for you in your life are going to empower your decisions and stand by them. Even if they don't do the same, even if they don't choose the same for themselves, they'll want to empower you and lift you up. And anyone who doesn't do that, you've really got to ask yourself what their agenda is there and whether they're really looking out for you or for themselves.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I asked on Instagram for some questions for you, and a few people were asking about how to sort of deal with other people and what they might think and their maybe judgments about if you're making a decision to sort of have a break from alcohol or be alcohol free.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even I've noticed in the last couple of months, if I say, oh, I don't drink,
yeah,
it kind of, it seems to trigger in the other person a need to kind of slightly defend what they're doing. So I've had a few people say to me, oh, you know, can't you just have one? Or I just love to have a glass of wine with
steak,
dinner or something, you know, I just like to have, yeah, a glass of wine, love the taste, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And almost like sort of defensiveness in the other person. And I, you know, I'm not judging anyone else's choice. I don't care what anyone else does. You know, I'm on my path and this is the right thing for me. And yet there is a sense that people find it a bit threatening or think that you're judging them. Or there probably are people listening to this who are thinking to themselves, oh, I don't need to be alcohol free, and almost finding that this might be judging them or something, us talking about this even. And just to kind of wanted to kind of address those kind of feelings and thoughts, those people listening. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think inherently when you talk about something like this, it is going to be divisive. And it's like holding up a mirror to someone else's behavior. You know, when you make a statement of this thing I no longer do for these reasons, then it's going to cause the other person to automatically look at themselves, their behavior, why they still do it, all of that. So I think it's really hard, and I totally relate to what you just said, is that you can really innocently just say, oh no, I'm just going to have elderflower tonight. I don't drink, actually. Nothing to do with the other person. And yet you will suddenly feel oh wow, I'm in a conversation with someone who's just justifying why they drink. I don't need the justification. I didn't ask you, you know, but it's a real, it's something that I see a lot, is people want to defend their own stance. And I think it's natural, you know, and for us as non-drinkers, I think it's, you know, you just can make them feel comfortable. I say to a lot of my friends who do drink, you can drink. I don't mind at all. You know, as long as you let me be kind of where I am, you be where you are. And it's not a problem. I'll never request that people don't drink around me. Initially, when I first stopped, I was definitely, as I mentioned, more protective about the environments that I put myself in. And I probably wouldn't have gone out with the girlfriends who get absolutely hammered, just because it would have been difficult for me, you know. But now, at the stage that I'm at 6 years in, I really don't mind being around drunk people. If anything, it's a reminder of, yeah, but I really don't want to be that again, because it's just, you know, the same conversations three times in an hour. It's not for me. It's just not what I want to be doing at this point in my life, you know, for me. So it's a happy reminder. But yeah, like, I think it is, it's going to cause people to defend, and it may get some people's backs up. And just in terms of different environments, so obviously you've got your friendship group, work can be a tricky one. I know lots of people who I've spoken to have said, yeah, but it's really hard because we have drinks in the afternoon. Sometimes we have to drink with clients. And how do you navigate that? You know, I'm actually quite lucky in that I haven't had to navigate that, but I've spoken to lots of people who have had to, and there are ways and means. You know, if you really make a choice and you want to commit to this because it's your priority for your life, no one's going to make the choice for you. So if you're choosing this, then you've got to be on, you know, on top of the excuses that you might give. And perhaps in a working environment, I know people who will request a Bloody Mary, but just say, I just want the tomato juice. They'll say that to the waitress. I even know of situations where, so that the client at work hasn't been aware that there's no alcohol in the drink, they've said, can you charge me for the alcoholic version, but give me the non-alcoholic version? And waiters are very discreet. You know, it saddens me that we have to do that, that there is people in the world that feel like they have to kind of underhandedly order a drink that isn't alcohol, that hasn't got alcohol in it. But, you know, there are, what my point is there is that even in the situations where you feel, wow, I'm really going to be judged, this is going to alienate a working business relationship, and I can't have that happen, there are smart things that you can do as you're navigating it. Another one that I know for some people, when they first stop drinking, because they just don't feel comfortable in owning that they're having a period of time alcohol free, you can use excuses like, I'm on antibiotics right now. I know lots of people do that, and it just gets people off your back, you know. Yeah. And it's not true. But it gets people off your back. And if you're feeling shaky and you're out in a social situation and you don't want a load of strangers giving you jip about the fact that you've decided, you know, you're not drinking, just tell them you're on antibiotics. I think you've got to find little ways that work for you. And as you move through sobriety, you get more comfortable with it, and you connect so much more with the perks that actually, my experience has been, you care less about what other people think.
Yeah.
And just on an energetic level, people read that. So once you're comfortable with being alcohol free, I rarely get questions these days. People go, oh, are you not drinking? And I say, no, I've not drunk for 6 years, with a smile. And they're like, a lot of times they'll go, wow, I wish I could do that. You know, it's not, oh, why, what's wrong with you? It's like, oh, tell me about that. How? Like, why would you, you know, and we have a really nice chat. There are lots of different reasons you can give, but if people do say, oh, why is it that you don't drink? I'll just say, alcohol just doesn't work for me. I've tried and tested it so many times, and it just doesn't work for me. I'm a better person. I'm a nicer person. And my life works in a much more manageable, flowing way when alcohol's not a part of it. So it's just a decision I've made, you know, and you can't really argue with that.
No,
you can't argue with that. People are just like, oh, right, fair enough. And some people even get inspired and sort of Facebook message you or follow up after saying, can we have a coffee? I'd want to talk to you more about it. So it's cool, because you suddenly start to realize, I think we're probably not alone in this. A lot of people have been conditioned in society to feel like this is the thing you have to do. And yes, it's fun and there are amazing elements to drinking, which is why so many of us have done it or continue to do it. But there's also, I think, a definite demographic of people. I know lots of people at university who are just a bit like, oh God, I really have to do this thing to fit in, but it doesn't really make me happy, you know? So it's interesting. I think there are some people who are actually looking for permission to give it a break, to try out a period. And on that note, I actually wanted to talk to you about a Guardian, I think it was an article in the Guardian, about Go Sober for October that I read recently. And it was just talking about having a month off, because obviously you've got the sober month off, and then when you've got January, which is the really popular one, Dry January as well. And it was an article basically just looking at sort of scientifically about the benefits of having a whole month off alcohol. Because obviously the tendency for a lot of people is to have a month of abstinence and then to come November the 1st to hit really hard and go out and get drunk, right? So the whole article was saying, is it actually any good to have this month off if the other 11 months of the year you're not being mindful at all and is actually quite a destructive force in your life? And it was really interesting and food for thought. But the thing that I really took away as someone who doesn't drink is, wow, I love the fact that we're getting all angsty about, is it better to have a month off or is it better to have 3 days every week off or something, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the conclusion of that article specifically was they actually felt that having less drinking days every week across the year was more positive and better for your health and just sort of general what we've been talking about, emotional well-being, resilience, the way that you evolve. Is way better than having a month where there may be a tendency just to sit at home and do nothing. And you're not growing when you do that. You know, if you do go sober for October, but you just have no social events, it's not really changing anything. It's not changing the way that you relate to people. You're not challenging yourself. You're just cutting something out and sitting tight. So it was a really good article. But the thing that I couldn't help feeling reading it is, gosh, we spend such a lot of our energy justifying and finding ways to make drinking work for us, when actually the bottom line is we know it's not healthy. It's officially come out that there's no safe level of alcohol at all that you can drink, right? That's the kind of news story in the last couple of months, which is terrifying for people who love to drink. I get that. So, you know, but let's not be in denial about this. We know what smoking does now. No one tries to justify their smoking habit. We know that wearing seatbelts is something that by law we're obligated to do. It wasn't always the way, but it is now, and we accept it. But we've still got this thing with alcohol where it's like, yeah, but how can we make it work for us? Like, maybe we have a month off, or maybe we do a little bit less each week. And I just think, as someone who is alcohol free, but there's also the option, which wasn't mentioned in the article, of just not drinking. Mm-hmm. And it's possible, and you won't die. Like, you're going to have a good life. You know, you might have a little bit of challenging periods as you adjust and you evolve, but you can have a full, happy and exciting life alcohol free. And it's rarely presented to us in the press, you know? So
that sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. I think what that really made me think of is that people might say, oh, well, can't you just have one drink, or just drink on the weekends, or just special occasions? I considered this, but really, I know what I'm like. I know that I'll start off just drinking at weddings or just at, you know, on Saturday night, and then it will creep up and it'll be like, oh, I'm going out for dinner on a Wednesday. My friend's having a glass of wine. I'll have one too. And that'll turn into two drinks. And then suddenly, you know, a big weekend will happen or something with a friend's birthday and I'll drink a load. And actually, it's a lot easier just to say I'm not going to drink at all than it is to try and be moderate. And I'm not saying that's the same for everyone, but just as human beings, that's the way we are. We're quite all or nothing as a species. Yeah. We find it hard to do things like, well, a drug, an addictive drug. It makes sense that it'd be hard to do it moderately.
Totally.
But so many of us are of that mindset of, oh, I can't just have, I know, one biscuit, I've got to have like three, or I can't just have one glass of wine, I've got to have a half a bottle or something. So, and I guess what it does when you decide that you're not going to drink at all is that you free yourself up. You don't have to think about it anymore. You don't have to make that decision. Oh, will I, won't I? Oh, better just have one. And then wishing that you could have two, but you decided just to have one, and then it's kind of on your mind thinking, oh, I wish I could have another glass of wine, sort of thing.
So you had three and then you hate yourself the next day because you said you were going to have one, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, it's so much energy and it's so much kind of battling with yourself. And for me, I personally really agree with you. It's easy. It's easy. And there's this, I think the whole black and white thing, you're like, oh, don't be so black and white about it. People say that. Why is it so bad to be black and white about drinking? I've really experienced a lot of stress in the grey area. I spent many years sort of in the grey area, sort of doing it and then not doing it. And actually just making the commitment, actually, I'm just, for today, I'm not going to drink, you know, and I've done that every day for 6 years. And it's just simplified my life in a way that is hard to imagine until you start walking the path and then you realize it's possible, you know. So, yeah, it's, I think that's the thing is, if you're in that place where you say, well, why can't I have one? My response will be, well, you can have one. You can do it. You know, if that works for you, then do it. No one's going to stop you. But if you identify that you are of that nature where one becomes two or three, and then you're feeling groggy the next day, or you spend too much money, or you say things that you regret, then why not give a stint of being alcohol-free a try? You know, try something new.
And something like Sober for October could be a good opportunity for people. Maybe they recognise that alcohol impacts their anxiety levels negatively.
Yeah.
To give it a try to see how it impacts your Monday morning or see how you feel on a Sunday night. Sunday night is the biggest peak hour, peak time. From 4 o'clock on a Sunday, people are kind of hungover from the week, from the weekend. They're dreading the week ahead. Oh. And it's a huge, hugely anxious time. And actually, if you don't drink, that a lot of that is taken away. And Monday morning is a lot easier.
Yeah.
So maybe do it as an experiment for October and just see how it goes and see if it does work for you and see if you do notice some benefits. And what I would also add is that if you're listening to this and thinking, I don't know, if there's resistance coming up, if you're feeling kind of attacked, or if it's making you want to drink more even, just kind of be aware of that feeling coming up, because resistance can come up sometimes when we deep down know that there's some truth in what's being said and the old pattern is trying to sustain itself in a way by bringing up that sense of resistance or judgment or something around what's being said. To just get curious about that if, you know, you as a listener are experiencing that.
Yeah, that's really good advice. That's really good advice. I'm very aware that, you know, for someone who is not yet on the journey at all, this is quite a strong message, you know, and I don't apologize for that, because it's what I believe to counteract everything that our culture tells us. I think there needs to be certain people who stand up and say, you know what, there's a real alternative here. Because one of the biggest things that surprised me about living an alcohol-free life is I kind of didn't know it was possible. You know, I didn't have anyone modeling it for me. I didn't understand what the benefits would be. I just didn't think it was possible. I thought my life would stop. And actually what it's done is it's opened up my world. It's opened up my friendship groups. It's opened up my mind and my kind of emotional development way more than I expected. So yeah, I think it's really nice that you acknowledge, you know, it's a topic that divides, and it's okay if you don't feel like it's something that you want to explore right now. Maybe it's not for you, or maybe it's going to be for you, but not quite yet. But I definitely just say, you know, as a gentle challenge, there's no harm in just giving it a shot and just seeing if any of these benefits actually do come through for you during a month like October, when there's going to be so many people doing the same thing. Something else that I wanted to address, which I think kind of goes hand in hand with living alcohol free, is, you know, one of the big reasons, like you said, anxiety and drinking are so closely linked. And it's a kind of a vicious circle, because we feel anxious, so we reach for a glass of wine or whatever just to take the edge off that difficult day or slightly pressured social interactions. And then, of course, the kind of offset of that is that you feel anxious because you've had the wine. So you're in this constant cycle of feeling anxious, so drinking, and then having more anxiety because of the drink. And something that I find is really helpful is just being prepared in advance for how you're going to deal with the feelings that come up, be it stress, be it anxiety, be it, you know, emotional stuff that maybe you haven't resolved because you've always just kept a lid on it by drinking things down. And everyone has different ways and means of managing your kind of emotional landscape, as it were. But I wanted to share a couple that have been really valuable for me. And they've kind of stayed pretty consistent, actually, over the last few years. So first one for me that I found really helpful was some movement. In terms of like how we feel emotionally, we can talk about our feelings a lot, but actually physical movement, doing something to relieve the stress that we feel inside our body, for me has always been a very powerful way of just letting my hair down, really. When you can't go out and get smashed, there needs to be tangible things that you can do as an alternative. And I know particularly when I first gave up drinking, I started running. You know, and for other people, it might be a different sort of sport discipline. But for me, it was running. I found it quite meditative. Yes, I think I put one more syllable than I needed to there. So it just brought me a sense of kind of calm and just an ability to shake off any sort of heaviness that had stuck to me that day. So I was running quite regularly. I was running in nature quite regularly. So wherever possible, you know, I do go to the gym now, but I try and this morning, actually, I told you I went for a run today. I've been out in nature this morning. And for me, nature being around something that is bigger and more brilliant than myself, you know, and when you live in London and you live in kind of a concrete jungle, it's very easy to become disconnected from nature. But there's nothing like running through a wood or a green space where there are sprawling trees, you know, and suddenly the things that I'm worried about or I'm holding on to and feeling a bit annoyed about, it just begins to dissipate. You know, I really feel that nature has a way of right-sizing our problems. And that can be running through nature, or it could just probably be sitting by a tree and just having that time with yourself to breathe and just be in that expansive space, you know? So there are two things: exercise and getting yourself outdoors as much as possible and just giving yourself some time to process whatever it is that you're feeling are really important. For me also, meditation. I know you're a keen meditator. Prayer and meditation for me have been key. You know, asking for kind of guidance just for me really helps with anxiety in the morning. I'll literally lift up in prayer. You know, there are certain things that I'm feeling today, and I just ask for guidance. I asked before I came on this call, I asked for the right things to come out of my lips, you know, and instantly it becomes less about me and what I'm going to say and just about being in the present moment. You know, I find prayer and meditation really powerful. Prayer, we ask for things, and meditation, we receive. So they're two practices that probably will be very foreign to some people. They would definitely work for me a few years ago, but two things completely free. You can do them wherever you need to. There's 100 things on the internet about in terms of the guidance and how to start practicing, but really, really good for your heart space, for your mental well-being. And the final thing, which I think is a good one to talk about with sort of drinking, is managing resentments. They say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is sort of a regular meeting that happens all over the world for groups of people who no longer have a desire to drink. That's basically the requirement for membership, is they say if you have a desire to stop drinking, you are welcome to sit in a meeting and to listen to what's being shared. And interestingly, what's being shared is rarely about alcohol and all about feelings and emotions and why we feel the need to drink. It's fascinating. But they say in those rooms that the number one offender, the number one thing that causes people to go back to drinking is resentment. You know, anger and resentment are really, really toxic emotions. And something that I've learned through my sobriety, and this is as applicable on your first day of being alcohol free as it is 6 years in, and I'm sure 25 years in, is being really mindful of what you're holding on to, and communicating more. So these days I am very aware of, you know, whether I'm upset and I need to talk to someone about it, clearing any things that are going to cause me emotional discomfort. And that may then lead me to go, well, actually, I really need a glass of wine because I can't deal with the feeling that I'm experiencing here. So you become, when you're living alcohol-free, more protective about your emotional landscape, because you can't just check out. You know, you can't check out with that alcoholic beverage. So managing your resentments is really important. And that looks like boundaries, I think, a lot of the time. Is that, I mean, classic for me, I like to please people. So if you ask me, Chloe, to do something, I might be compelled to say, oh, yeah, no, that sounds great. Let's do that. But actually, if I don't want to, ultimately, I'm going to feel resentful at you because I've said yes to something that I don't want to do. Mm. So I'm slightly annoyed at you. I'm actually quite annoyed at myself for saying yes when I wanted to say no. And then I've got this resentment, you know, and it's uncomfortable to sit with those things. And I think particularly women struggle with people pleasing a lot more than men, in my experience. It's something that as kind of caregivers, and we're meant to be sort of polite, there's all these sort of expectations on women, and we can find ourselves agreeing and committing to things that we just don't want to bloody do, you know? And so for me, resentments, a big part of managing those is to start really looking at what I agree to in my life, what I allow in my life, certain relationships and friendships. You know, I make sure that I communicate my boundaries. If I feel someone's overstepped the mark and it's bothered me, then I need to find the courage to sit down with that person if I care about our relationship and say, look, that thing that happened the other day, I've actually been feeling not good about it. Can we talk about that? I'd like to understand where you were coming from with it. I'd like to tell you how I feel. Conversations that maybe it's easier not to have, but ultimately create that real sense of connection and help you to avoid checking out and trying to push those feelings of frustration down with alcohol. So yeah, resentments are a biggie, in my opinion. Really one to be mindful of.
Thank you for that. There's so much gold in what you've just said. I think that's just really useful tools and things to be aware of. And boundaries are such a big one. I think you're so right about that. And we say yes to things that we don't want to say yes to. And it's okay to say no. You can't please everyone all the time. Can't be responsible for other people's feelings all the time. So really good one to be aware of. So I think we've covered a lot of ground. I'm sure we could talk about this a lot more. I think it's such a big topic and it's so huge. Interesting. But I think we better wrap it up.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to me. It's been really interesting, and I've got a renewed kind of vigor for wanting to carry on in this path again, talking to you. I think you're an amazing role model for this, and thank you for spreading such a positive message around this.
My pleasure, Chloe. I'm glad that you feel renewed 2.5 months in. It's nice to talk, isn't it? And just to sort of re-inspire and I guess refocus on why you would want to live this way, you know, because I think alone it can be quite a lonely path, but there are so many people and there are so many people that you can kind of bounce off and chat with. So yeah, I think for anyone who is considering it or maybe already partway into living alcohol free and feeling wobbly, see who you can reach out to, because just that human contact and just voicing concerns, I find, is really helpful as well. If you're having a bit of a wobble, one for me I know has come up time and time again over the last few years is my life feels less fun now I don't drink. And I'll have the thought about it and I'll spend a few days with it. And what I always end up coming back to is, no, my life isn't less fun. I'm making less fun choices. It's totally up to me how I fill my diary. And the fact that I haven't planned anything for Saturday evening is nothing to do with alcohol and everything to do with the fact that I've not initiated a plan. You know, I can go out dancing. I can do all sorts of things. It comes from you taking action in your life. But it's really quick to blame the absence of booze, I think. I think communicating with people who are of a similar mind and they can challenge you and help you to see things in different ways, it can be really healthy as well, particularly at the beginning.
I know you've spoken about sort of people on Instagram. Are there certain books that you recommend or resources or things that are helpful, people to follow that you...
Yeah, okay. So, firstly, you can follow my Instagram account, which is not actually exclusively sobriety, but it's very much about emotional well-being. So my handle is @motherheart. So I will talk about sobriety. I'll just talk about all things about really being good with your heart and connecting to your emotions. And sobriety for me is a big part of that. Other people who I think have written brilliant books, you've mentioned it already. Catherine Gray wrote The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, which is a really good read, very practical as well. There's another book called A Naked Mind by Annie Grace. Which is
This
another,
Naked Mind?
This Naked Mind,
this Naked
you're
Mind,
right.
Yeah.
This Naked Mind by Annie Grace is another really good read. Instagram-wise, it's so personal because everyone's different with what they like. So I'm not gonna recommend anyone specifically, but if you search the hashtags for sobriety, sober girl, sober living, anything like that,
yeah,
have a look and just see who pops up, because there's certain accounts that have got massive followings, there's certain accounts that have got really small followings, but there's some gold, you know, in all of it. So see what voice resonates with you and just follow people who inspire you and help you to stay on this path yourself. But Instagram is like, it seems to be the way now to be just plugging into people who have that similar mindset. It's such an amazing but damaging tool, isn't it?
Yeah.
My gosh.
Good points and bad points.
I know. But yeah, for sobriety, it can be pretty cool.
Yeah. And what about, how can people find out about you and what you do? And if people want to work with you, how can they find out about that?
Yeah. So you can go to my website, which is motherheart.com. not .co, not .co.uk, just .co, and everything's on there. So I work one-to-one, and I also hold kind of group workshops as well, and it's all on the website. I think Instagram's the most interesting place in terms of just sort of following along and engaging in ideas and things that I do. It's my kind of passion, is my Instagram feed. But yeah, in terms of coming to a session or a group workshop, you can find it all on my website, and always available by email if anyone's got any kind of questions that we haven't covered here today or any concerns. Just drop me a line. I'm always happy to hear from people.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for talking to me. Great to chat to you.
Thanks, Chloe.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.